From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the buyer. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
And now they're past the 8th pole, and it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire. Victorious in the Vosburgh, 1-3.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner in the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose all the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish.
See, there's the devil, strikes the front of the eighth pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is She Dares the Devil turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She Dares the Devil scores in the Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, right here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next couple of hours on this Halloween edition of the show. You are listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or you're tuned in digitally on our horseracingradio.net website with our live stream or the podcast of the show. And happy to have you aboard for the next 2 hours. Try not to scare you too much on this Halloween show. How about this? This is a bit scary, at least if you work for Breeders' Cup, maybe, and you have to make all the final preparations. 7 days, 3 hours, 28 minutes. Now check that. I looked at the wrong countdown. How about that? 6 days, 2 hours, and 27 minutes. So that'll scare you even a little bit more as we get closer to what promises to be a memorable Breeders' Cup World Championships, returning to the Bluegrass for the first time since 2015. But, you know, you don't have to wait very long to hear plenty of Breeders' Cup conversation. And we've been bringing it to you for the past few weeks. We've visited with many of the major players, trainers and owners, and we'll talk to jockeys next week as well. This morning show is loaded with Breeders' Cup talk. And I'm going to visit with trainers Mark Cassie, Ron Moquette, and Dale Romans to talk about their Breeders' Cup entrance. Plus, you're going to hear from Breeders' Cup Senior Vice President of Racing and Nominations, Dora Delgado, to talk about what happened earlier this week with the pre-entries. We are also just 72 hours away from the start of our week-long Breeders' Cup programming here on HRN. It all kicks off at 8 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday morning with the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows, which you can hear Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings. The Ponta for the Pick Four, Jude Feld, is back, and he's back alongside Bobby Newman to interview owners, trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and much, much more to get you ready for the 37th Breeders' Cup World Championships. You can also tune in to our regular weekly shows all next week, and those include Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, with Bobby and the Big A, Anthony Stabile. That show comes your way every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Next week, it'll be Wednesday, Thursday, because of the Breeders' Cup races later in the week. Wednesday and Thursday, 3 to 6 Eastern. You've got Trainer Talk. You've got our call-in show. And you have a special 90-minute weekend stakes preview show on Friday. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. The call-in show is the Brisnet.com call-in show. And then the weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts. And our thanks to each and every one of those sponsors for helping to make all of that possible for you year in and year out. Then on Friday and Saturday, we turn our attention to the races. And you can hear exclusive coverage of every Breeders' Cup race Friday and Saturday afternoons right here on HRN, the only place you'll hear it on radio. Our coverage begins 2:30 Eastern time on Friday and noon Eastern on Saturday. And you'll hear every single Breeders' Cup race with us, all 14. So head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the complete Breeders' Cup week schedule. Put it in your phone. Save it. Whatever you need to do. Set an alarm to be up early starting Tuesday morning. And make sure you're locked in. We'll get you ready for racing's championship days. Well, Mark Cassie's going to kick off the show with me at 8:15 Eastern time. The dual Hall of Famer is just a few wins shy of reaching the 3,000-win milestone in what has been a remarkable career. 5 years ago, when the Breeders' Cup was held at Keeneland, we were talking about Mark as possibly, potentially, the greatest trainer never to win a Breeders' Cup race. It was a lot like you heard with Phil Mickelson before he won a major in golf. Is he the greatest golfer never to win a major? And then Phil won his first major, and then many, many more after that. They just kind of started flowing. Well, 5 years ago, 2015, when the Breeders' Cup was at Keeneland, Mark was in that same position. And I remember him joining us trackside on our Breeders' Cup countdown show, and I brought that up to him. That all changed when Catch a Glimpse scored in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies that year. He quickly added a second when Tepin beat the boys in the Breeders' Cup Mile. And he's now gone on to saddle 5 Breeders' Cup winners. It's funny how that happens. It's like a hitter in baseball who's in a slump, and they can't buy a hit. They might hit the ball solid, but it goes right to somebody. All of a sudden, they get one to fall, and they just keep coming. It's weird the way that happens, but it happened like that for Mark Cassie. He has 7 horses pre-entered in this year's event. I'll talk to him about all 7 coming up in just a little bit. Dora Delgado will be with me as well, 8:35 Eastern. I told you the Senior Vice President of Racing and Nominations with the Breeders' Cup. In total, 201 horses were pre-entered this past week. That's actually up from 188 a year ago. Pretty solid. Great support for the Breeders' Cup in a year where we're dealing with a global health pandemic, and you wondered how that might affect the entries. Well, 7% increase is pretty good, and I'll talk to Dora about that at 8:35 Eastern. Ron Moquet, 9 o'clock. Ron has just one horse entered in this year's Breeders' Cup, and he's hoping the fourth time will be the charm for the talented 7-year-old gelding Whitmore in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. If you tell me that you can't get behind Whitmore, you know, look, there's if you're a fan of horses, if you're a fan of racing in any you don't have to like the horse. You don't have to bet the horse. But, boy, you can cheer for this horse. 4th consecutive year he'll start in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Maybe this is the year he finally breaks through. You have trainer Dale Romans coming up at 9:20. Dale, always a popular guest on this show. He pre-entered 5 horses to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, including Sittin' on Go, who will go in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, looking to give Dale his first win in that race, and he has brought some good ones. Brody's Cause, as a matter of fact, is the sire of Sittin' on Go. Brody's Cause was trained by Dale. He was 3rd behind eventual Kentucky Derby winner Nyquist in the 2015 Breeders' Cup Juvenile held at Keeneland. So he's hoping that his son, Sittin' on Go, can break through and find a way to get to the winner's circle in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And he entered Girl Daddy, winner of the Pocahontas at Churchill. And Girl Daddy going to face maybe about 7 rivals or so in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. He has others too, but those are 2 of his bigger names. And I'll talk to Dale later in the program about that. And then I'll wrap it up. We'll have a little fun in the final segment. Let's put it that way. We'll take a look at some horse names that tie in to Halloween and the theme with this particular day. Many people around the country will be trick-or-treating, although it might be a different type of trick-or-treating experience for the kids this year. But we'll try to do our best and make it through safely here on this Saturday night. And that leads me to the poll question. It's kind of a virtual trick-or-treat that we're going to do here for you this morning on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'll have some fun. What is your favorite Halloween candy? That's what I want to know. I'm going to give you 4 choices. You can go to @HRN on Twitter. That's our Twitter feed to cast your vote. Or Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. You can do it there, too. What is your favorite Halloween candy? And here's the 4 choices. Skittles, always popular. M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, and candy corns. Choose from one of those. If you like something else better, feel free to comment and let us know. Skittles, M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, and candy corns. Candy corns are getting my vote every time. I'm a huge M&M's fan, too. I was never big on Skittles. Can't stand Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, which I know is blasphemy to many of you, my wife included. Love peanut butter, love chocolate, hate them together. Candy corns, man, that's going to be a tough out in those four choices. But I have a feeling, from what I know about many people, that the peanut butter cups are probably going to be the favorite in this field. But give me candy corns any day of the week. What is your favorite Halloween candy? Let me know, and I'll try to pass along those results if I get time later in the show. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. So here you go. Mark Cassie, 8:15, just a few minutes away. Dora Delgado, 8:35. Ron Moquette, 9 o'clock. Dale Romans at 9:20. Plus your Kentucky Bred Spotlight and our Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. A lot to get to this morning. It all comes your way next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
But there is absolutely no stopping Songbird. It is all Songbird. Mike Smith aboard, crushing the field.
Only on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his third year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his first year and 116 in his second. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Alice Springs is going to try to find an opening down toward the inside and fourth. Thrilled is fifth. Harmonize is in sixth in between horses off the turn. Sapphire Kitten comes forward. Alice Springs need room. Catch a Glimpse has the lead. Ruby Notion drops back. Catch a Glimpse leading it. And Sapphire Kitten trying, Alice Springs trying, Nemeralia running late from far back, Catch a Glimpse with the lead, Nemeralia runs on from the outside, Catch a Glimpse the leader, Catch a Glimpse the winner for Florent Giroux. Close for second, maybe Alice Springs, if not her, it'll be Nemeralia for that runner-up spot in 1 minute, 39 seconds.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Happy Halloween. A little ominous music bed there. Nothing ominous about that performance unless you were running against Catch a Glimpse in the Juvenile Fillies turf back in 2015. She rolled the victory. Kurt Becker had the call for you. We're going to have all that coverage again this weekend. Mark Cassie joined us, as I told you in the first half of the show, first segment of the show. Mark Cassie joined us on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show that year. And coming into 2015, he had yet to win a Breeders' Cup race. And we said, is Mark Cassie the greatest trainer in our sport never to win a Breeders' Cup? Well, that changed. Catch a Glimpse won. Teppan took the Breeders' Cup mile in 2015. And since then, Mark has gone on to saddle 5 Breeders' Cup winners. They are just flowing now, and he's hoping for more coming up here in 2020. Mark is with me now. Mark, the dual Hall of Famer, always a pleasure, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Do you remember that conversation we had trackside at Keeneland during Breeders' Cup week when I asked you that question? I said, is Mark Cassie maybe the greatest trainer never to win a Breeders' Cup? And all of a sudden, here you are with five.
Oh, I remember. That was a struggle. It was something that pounded us for a long time. And glad to have that monkey off her back. And, we've been very fortunate since. I think you were a good luck charm.
You know, not too many people ever say that to me, Mark, so I'll take it when I can get it. But I'm glad that you broke through. I'm glad that they're flowing now. I mentioned, you won two in 2015. You came back in 16, won another, 17, 18, and now looking to start a new streak here in 2020. Would be great to see. You've got seven that you pre-entered. I guess we'll just walk through each and every one of them. But before I do it, let's start by looking back on that day in 2015. When you think about that Breeders' Cup, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind?
Well, I hadn't listened to that call in a long time, but yeah, Catch a Glimpse was our first winner. It was exciting and very fulfilling. And like you said, you know, this is something, every year I would have to listen to, Mark Cassie hasn't won a Breeders' Cup yet. So that was nice. And then, And then for Teppan to come back, and win the next day was just a dream come true. And to do it, a lot of people don't know this, but it's where my father, Keeneland was where my father first was introduced to racing. And it's where I had my first winner at a major racetrack. I had a horse called Joe's Coming when I was 18 years old, went at Keeneland. So Keeneland's always meant a lot to not just me, but my family. And to be able to win our first Breeders' Cup at Keeneland was, a dream come true.
Yeah, and hopefully more to come this year. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint is the first of the 14 Breeders' Cup races that will be contested. It's run on Friday. All the two-year-old races run on Friday. Dirty Dangle is a horse that you pre-entered but not selected into the field. He's going to need some help to get into that race. But if he does get in, tell me a little bit more about Dirty Dangle.
She's actually a filly. She's a filly that we purchased after her last race. Bought her from a friend of mine, Ralph Biamonte, in Toronto. I thought her last race was very impressive. Disappointed that she didn't draw into the race. I do, when we're looking at things, looks like, definitely there's going to be some horses that are going to go opt and go other places. I still think there's a good shot that she can get in. We're hoping so. We're training her up towards that race, and she's actually getting on a van. Our Canadian contingency is leaving this morning, heading for Keeneland. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. Hope she gets in, and I think she'll really enjoy a little give to the ground and the 5.5 furlongs at Keeneland.
Yeah, I guess that would include the appropriately named Gretzky the Great as well, who is pre-entered into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and a horse, Mark, that can really run. And it's so cool to have a horse named after Wayne Gretzky that is this special right now.
It is. It's a great name. He's a great horse. And, I think he's training very well, and I think he'll run super. So, it is. He's gotten a lot of publicity, especially in north of the border, with his name.
What do you like most about him, Mark, as you come into the Juvenile Turf?
He gives you everything he has, just like his namesake. He's smooth on the ice. He moves really well. He's a great moving horse. He gets over turf. Probably at some point you'll see us try him on dirt. I don't think he's only a grass horse, but Woodbine has such a great grass program that you get caught up in that, and it's hard to get away from it. So we're going to go this route for now, but you could possibly see him try the dirt somewhere in the future.
It's a great point. That Woodbine turf course is, well, first of all, it's beautiful to look at. And I know that you have raced there for many, many years, and you're a big fan of it. But when you compare that particular racing surface to the turf course that we see at Keeneland, how much different are they? How similar are they, Mark? What's the big deal there with those two?
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, Mike, there are some there will be some differences. One, our horse has never been able to run around two turns, obviously, because Woodbine has such a large turf course that he's only ran around one turn. So that's a minus. So similarities, the Woodbine is not level, similar to Keeneland, where there's a little up and down. So, you know, that would be similarities. But that's a big concern. The good news is he's extremely fast, and that's going to be important. The post position in both the filly and the colt race on the turf, it's a mile, and it's a quick run to the first turn. You can lose the race going in the first turn. You can lose the race before the race, as we've seen many times in post positions. I've been very unfortunate in the filly division. Twice I've brought fillies to the Breeders' Cup that I thought, you know, were unbeatable, and they drew the 14 hole, which is a killer. So we have to be lucky at the draw, and then we have to be lucky at the break. So there's definitely a little more luck involved with the mile races at Keeneland.
Yeah, it's interesting about the Keeneland turf course as opposed to that Woodbine turf course. You have Dolder Grand, another horse, Mark, with Gretzky the Great, that is also pre-entered into that juvenile turf. But much like we just talked about with your other horses, you're going to need some help with Dolder Grand trying to get into this race. He was not selected into the field. He's kind of far down on the list. But tell me a little bit about Dolder Grand.
Yeah, Dolder Grand is, I think, one of our stars in the making. Unfortunately, he's not gonna get into the Breeders' Cup, which, you know what, maybe it's a blessing. We breezed him yesterday on the dirt. He breezed extremely well at Woodbine, so he's heading for Kentucky, and he's going to concentrate on dirt in the future. So it's unfortunate he didn't get in, but maybe it's a blessing, and we'll move on forward with him.
Visiting with trainer Mark Cassie here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know, a few weeks back, I was invited to go to Keeneland to watch Spanish Love Affair. Michael Hernan is a good friend of mine, and he says, hey, why don't you come on out and sit at the table? Spanish Love Affair is running in the Breeders' Cup Challenge race. And this is a filly. I got a chance to look at her in the paddock, Mark. She is a really pretty filly, and she ran into a monster in Aunt Pearl that day, but she was still a really good second. She goes in the juvenile filly's turf. Talk to me a little bit more about Spanish Love Affair.
Yeah, I was proud of her. She's, you know, like you said, she's a filly that I purchased for my wife as a yearling, and then Michael, you know, Michael really liked her, came and asked if, said he'd like to go partners with us, so we did that. She broke her maiden first time out by 11, and I told Michael, I said, okay, this is the time that we get out and sell. We sell our horses. I'm done it forever. For 35 years, I've always, once a horse runs good, I sell them. And lucky enough, we were, Eclipse and Gary Barber bought her, and we were able to continue to train her. I thought her last race was extremely good. Again, she's going to be like Gretzky the Great. She needs a little luck at the draw. And the good news for her, like Gretzky, is she does have some speed, and Tyler will have to use it. She breezed extremely well this morning, so she's ready. We're ready with her.
Yeah, and Spanish Love Affair, I think you'd have to say that she also lowered the stakes record from the previous stakes record. Not Pearl broke it by, gosh, it was like a second and a half or something, Mark. It was a freakish performance. Spanish Love Affair wasn't far behind her, so you have to think that she lowered the mark too. It'd be great to see that rematch coming up. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, and you're going to see a different turf course. How that will affect the outcome, I'm not sure, but as you alluded on the track record, the Keeneland turf was extremely fast when that race ran, and I don't think you're going to see the same type of turf course. You're going to see you know, a course that has a little more give in the ground. The good news for us is our fillies won twice down at Gulfstream with some give in the ground. So I don't see it bothering her. And, you know, maybe we can turn the tables on the other filly.
And now we get to talk about one of the toughest horses in training, that's Got Stormy. You had some options here. You could have gone a couple different directions. You opt for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Talk about that decision and talk about Got Stormy for a minute.
Again, we're betting that there's going to be given the ground. And Got Stormy cannot run a mile. The distance is too far for her when there's given the ground. She actually doesn't mind soft turf. She showed you that at Kentucky Downs. But my hopes and thoughts are we're going to have a little given the ground, which could deaden some of the speed. I'm hoping the 5.5 at Keeneland is more like running 3/4. And if that happens, you know, she's going to come with a big kick. She's training really well. She's bigger and stronger than I've ever seen her.
Yeah, she's ultra tough. Would be great to see her in the winner's circle if she can find a way to get it done. You come to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and here's your classic winner, War of Will. Again, I guess you could have gone a few different ways with him. You could have gone to the classic. You say Dirt Mile's the place to go. Tell me about War of Will and that decision.
Well, War of Will, you know, he's done a little bit of everything. He's a dual winner on dirt and turf. Our thought was that he's trained so well on the dirt right now that we just wanted to give him another try on it. It would be nice for him to be a grade one winner on the dirt at 3 and 4. I think it would help his, you know, his future as a stallion. So it's a tough race. It's a tough race, but he's a good horse. So he's trained really, really well into this race. So he'll need, again, the mile on the dirt is another race where very quick run into the first turn, and so much that they're only going to allow, I think, 12 to run, where everywhere else they run 14. We're going to need a little luck at the draw, and we're going to need some luck out of the starting gate, but he usually breaks very well, and he's fast. So I think Tyler should be able to put him in a good stocking position if things, you know, as long as we don't have any bad luck.
Well, and then in the Breeders' Cup Mile, the Turf Mile, you'll saddle March to the Arch for Mrs. Charlotte Weber, Live Oak Plantation. This is a horse that always shows up, always tries, Mark. And, again, you're probably going to need a little bit of luck, but if things break March to the Arch's way, you could be looking at a victory in there too.
Well, he's got plenty of bad luck that's happened to him. He's probably should have won 3 or 4 more races than he actually has. So my thought is this: if we can take all that bad luck and turn it into one really good luck, he's got a shot. He's already shown he likes Keeneland, so that's not a problem.
Yeah, a tough horse. I mean, that's a tough race. I mean, you look at, you know, Circus Maximus, the defending champ,
Uni,
yeah, Starship Jubilee. That's a rocks at Raging Bull. I mean, come on, that's always a tough race. But, you know, March to the Arch with a few breaks, who knows? You might end up in the winner's circle there too. Mark, listen, man, I appreciate the visit.
I agree.
And looking forward to seeing your horses strut their stuff on Friday and Saturday.
Well, hopefully you bring us good luck again, and I'm still waiting on my Cadillac. So
your Lexus.
I still can't believe I didn't win the lottery, the drawing. But anyways, all right.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, bye.
Mark Cassie, as good as it gets. Yeah, those, boy, that reference to, I think he meant to say his Lexus. He entered, Lexus was giving away a new Lexus, and he entered. He did not win. He thought just because Lexus was a sponsor of ours that he was going to have an inside track, but I couldn't help him. I didn't win either. I had to pay for my own Lexus. Come on. Unbelievable. That leads us into our next segment, which is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty, right here in Lexington, Kentucky. Stop in while you're in town for the Breeders' Cup and say hello to all the great folks at the Lexus Store of Lexington. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup.
The adage that all good things are worth waiting for was never better illustrated than when Alfred G. Vanderbilt's mare Geisha dropped her one-month overdue foal on March 27, 1950. The newly arrived gray colt was by 1945 Preakness winner Polynesian and most fittingly was bemonikered Native Dancer. In an absolutely brilliant career, he won 20 of 22 races. He was endeared by the American public and affectionately referred to him as the Dancer or the Gray Ghost. Huge crowds surrounding the paddock when he raced, transfixed by the combination of a majestic bearing, icy calmness that he displayed before his races, and they rushed down to the rail to catch a glimpse of Native Dancer charging down the stretch to victory from way behind, eating up huge chunks of ground with his 29-foot stride. Native Dancer's reputation preceded him in his very first outing in April of his two-year-old season. He was sent postered a 7-5 favorite and sprinted off to a 4.5 length win in breaking his maiden. A bare 4 days later, he came back to roar to victory in the youthful stakes at odds of 4-5. Never in all the rest of his days on the racetrack did he ever go up at odds any higher. He suffered a shin injury in the youthful, but he returned to the races in superb form 4 months later at Saratoga in August. He found himself in the winner's circle in the next 7 races in a row, the highlight of that streak being equaling of the world record for 6.5 furlongs in the running of the Belmont Futurity. Ankle problems delayed his first start in his sophomore season until April at Aqueduct in the Gotham Stakes 2 weeks before the Derby. He won the Gotham by 2 and romped home in the Wood Memorial by 4.5 to thereby establish himself as the overwhelming favorite in the run for the Roses. But that early May day in 1953 was not to be his day, and the chart of that Derby tells the story. Chart caller's comment read like this: Native Dancer, roughed at the first turn by Money Broker, was eased back to secure racing room, raced wide in the run to the upper turn, saved ground entering the stretch and finished strongly, but could not overtake the winner, although probably the best. Unquote. Writer Eric Guerin blamed the roughing at the clubhouse turn for the loss. Others pointed to the suspiciously large ankles of Native Dancer. At any rate, all observers agreed that in one more stride, Dark Star's victory by a head would have been instead another victory for the Dancer. After 3 hard races in 3 weeks, conditioner Bill Winfrey may well have expected to give his spectacular gray charger respite from the racing wars, but the Dancer was shipped to New York, where he won the Withers, and on the very next weekend he was on hand in Baltimore to nail down the Preakness. That was 5 wins in 5 consecutive weekends. Well, he finally got a break before galloping off to score in the Belmont Stakes and followed that with 4 more consecutive wins. Soreness in his left forefoot prevented him from meeting the 4-year-old sensation Tom Fool in the prestigious fall handicaps, and as a result, Tom Fool was named Horse of the Year. Native Dancer continued having physical problems as a 4-year-old, going postered only 3 times, but he did win all 3. He scored in the Metropolitan and Oneonta handicaps, packing 137 pounds in the latter. They were so impressive, he was finally accorded unanimous Horse of the Year honors in 1954. Through his bloodline, Native Dancer was responsible for a raft of outstanding thoroughbreds: Kauai King, Majestic Prince, Raisin Native, Coastal, Affirmed, Exclusive Native, Genuine Risk, Ruffian, and one of the world's all-time influential sires, Northern Dancer. That, my friends, is the story of the Gray Ghost, truly a legend in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Studs' Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top 5 general sire by the number of 2-year-old winners so far in 2020. and his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Three quarters up in 111.24, and they're into the stretch, and it's Swiss Skydiver, the filly, and the Kentucky Derby winner Authentic. They are nose to nose as they arrive at the final furlong. Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner and the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose. All the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish. Was it the filly? Swiss Skydiver. I think she did it. Authentic was with her on the wire. And the Preakness Stakes. The final time was 1:53-1.
Swiss Skydiver, the filly knocking off the boys in the Preakness Stakes. Larry Colmus had the call. Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Halloween style for you with all of our music beds underneath these rejoins today. Going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to the Breeders' Cup. It is edging ever closer next Friday and Saturday. If you're just joining us, our coverage begins Tuesday morning with the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows. Bobby Newman, the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, will interview owners, trainers, jockeys, you name it. They'll have it for you, and they'll get you ready for the World Championships, which promise to be fantastic, returning to Keeneland here in the Bluegrass. Well, you go from one talented, elegant filly in Swiss Skydiver to yet another one, and that's Dora Delgado with the Breeders' Cup. She is the Senior Vice President of Racing and Nominations, and she is with me now here on HRRN. Dora, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Happy Breeders' Cup week.
Yeah, it took a long time getting here. We were never quite sure we were going to be able to pull this off. So to be here this coming week with all of our horsemen arriving is a miracle.
Yeah, and you had to be thrilled when the pre-entries came in and you saw 201 horses pre-entered. That's up 7% from last year. That's huge.
It was amazing. And to be honest, you know, we had some fairly dire predictions throughout the year. You know, worst case scenarios, people weren't going to be able to travel. We weren't going to be able to get the Europeans in. So to have the horsemen, the owners and trainers support the Breeders' Cup in such a tremendous and impactful way was just astounding to us. This is the second highest number, tied with the second highest number of pre-entries we've ever had. Incredible in this climate.
Yeah, you had 221 in 2018 at Churchill Downs, but this 201 is a really strong number. How have you been able to work with the Euros and not just the horses, but the European handlers that come with the horses, maybe the trainers, some of the owners? How have you been able to work with them, and what's the situation going to be like?
So we had full confidence that we could get the actual horses here with no problems. The USDA had no import restrictions on the animals, but of course with the presidential proclamation in effect, we knew we were going to have tremendous difficulty in getting not only the stable staff, you know, but owners or breeders or anybody that was connected with the horse over here. But working through some of our connections in Washington, we were able to get an athletic waiver, we're considered a sports league by virtue of the championships, and we're able to apply for a special athletic waiver to get those trainers and support staff over here, the grooms, the exercise riders, all the head lads, as they're considered, you know, the coaches and the assistant coaches, you know, for these athletes. So it's been a long, hard process. I think I've spent more time on immigration and COVID planning than I have on recruiting horses this year. So super glad that they did the hard lifting for me on getting the horses, you know, pre-entered.
Do you think most of the trainers will make the trip here with their horses?
I think a lot of our international trainers are going to have to stay behind. They've sent their head lads, they've sent their assistants. The restrictions going back were, they were beginning to go in lockdown in France, I believe, yesterday. Ireland has imposed some really severe restrictions. They're going to have to stay home, unfortunately, with many of their owners and watch from home.
Well, 39 international horses have been pre-entered. I would assume Mr. Aidan O'Brien is going to lead the charge with those 39?
He has got quite a few. We're waiting to see who ultimately gets on the plane. They'll fly in on Monday, serve their quarantine and be out on the track on Thursday. So it's, you know, he's definitely leading the pack.
What were some of the other...
We have a lot of new international trainers this year, which is really, really surprising, but not unexpected. Of course, Josh has been out there beating the bushes, trying to, you know, to rouse them up. It's just unfortunate for their very first experience at Breeders' Cup. You know, they have this greatly abbreviated sort of event we're throwing this year, but we hope to get them back when we're at full capacity again.
Yeah, and that's out of your control. There's nothing you can do about that, and we see that in all sports now. And you just have to weather the storm and navigate the waters as best you can. It sounds like you're doing it magnificently, Dora. By the way, visiting with Dora Delgado from the Breeders' Cup, what were some of the other highlights included in this year's pre-entries?
Well, you know, we had 52 winners of the challenge program pre-enter, and that was really strong. 48 of those are individual runners, so, you know, we had some duplication. Some horses won multiple divisions. It's really incredible. That program continues to be so successful in providing a win, and you're in for the Breeders' Cup. Entry fees, you know, the Breeders' Cups are non-invitational, so, you know, everybody's got to either pay their way in or get one of these, you know, golden tickets by winning a challenge race to have their fees paid for them. So it's remarkable. This program has been a target for trainers, both here in the States and internationally for their free ticket to the Breeders' Cup. So we're very pleased with that effort as well.
The challenge races, the Win and You're In series, has just taken the interest in Breeders' Cup, number one, and the Breeders' Cup itself, the event itself, it's taken everything to a whole new level, and it continues. You would think at some point, Dora, that's got to taper off and it's got to level off, but it seems like every year the challenge series continues to grow, it continues to get more popular, and you hear more and more horsemen, trainers, owners, whatever it might be, saying, look, we're scheduling our year around these particular races to try to get to the Breeders' Cup. That's really cool.
Absolutely. And, you know, this year we had to remain a little flexible with our racing secretaries and our partner racetracks. They all were suffering the effects of shutdowns and the inability to conduct their full racing calendar. So we worked with our racing secretaries to make sure that their challenge races either got rescheduled or shifted to another race. Just for this year, and it really worked out very well. Gave our trainers lots of targets to shoot for, and it, you know, it certainly worked to everybody's benefit to have those. You know, I think we ended up with 81 total. There was a few that got canceled down in South America, but most everybody was able to shift their calendars around and still pull off their challenge races.
How much does it help you and the team, Dora, to be returning to a venue where you've been there, done that, as opposed to trying to handle this situation at a venue that's never hosted the Breeders' Cup before?
I literally could not imagine doing this anywhere but Keeneland, right? This year has been so challenging. We've had contingency plan after contingency plan. We've gone through COVID health protocol planning. We've had, you know, virus experts in advising us, and it was so So easy to just get in the car and drive, you know, 15 minutes across town and have those meetings with Keeneland, who have been superb hosts as they always are, but, you know, facing their own challenges by not being able to have a spring meet, having a very short summer, and then in a fall that was greatly affected as well. Still managing to pull off their sales. This group out here is just, they're superstars in every way. We couldn't be luckier to be here with Keeneland, partnered with them as we go through this thing. And it's entirely fitting that they get to do a do-over in 2022. You know, there's yep. nobody that's a better host to welcome people in and show that Southern hospitality, you know, so they really need a chance to be able to do that at full measure. So we're really happy we're returning here after Del Mar next year.
Yeah, very well said. And I know Keeneland Breeders' Cup doing everything within their power to keep everybody safe that will be on the grounds. You have to have a COVID test, a negative COVID test, to even be on the grounds. Which people are going to be allowed to be there, Dora, in terms of the horsemen that we're going to see?
So the horsemen that will be allowed, we did restrict it to just participants only. What we tried to do was create a bubble down on Rice Road, which is where all the breeders' competitors are housed. There are 9 barns that are solely dedicated to Breeders' Cup runners. We have high-definition cameras in each of those barns. We have a security watch that begins Tuesday for every runner. The finest in veterinary care. So in order to create this sports bubble, much like other sports leagues did, we knew we had to make sure that everybody coming onto the grounds down there had a negative COVID. Because we're so packed in there in those barns, the stabling is right next to you. You don't have any room to space out there, that we wanted to make sure that we could keep all of our competitors safe and healthy until they run on Friday and Saturday. Although we can't really control it like the NBA bubble, we don't have the ability to just put a complete lockdown in place. We've stressed very clearly to all our participants, you know, please take care of yourselves, please take care of your health, make sure you stay safe and healthy until we can get this show on the road and conduct these championships. And I have to say, everybody is tremendously cooperative. They know what needs to be done. Every time you enter Keeneland's grounds, you have a temperature check. You have to be scanned in either by virtual badge or by a credential that we've issued. So only people that are authorized to be on the grounds are here. It's a flawless system, to be quite honest. They've had so much practice with it over the summer that we just adopted their rules and continued on with them. And everybody's working really hard to stay healthy.
Yeah, that's great to hear. You know, we started this interview, Dora, with hearing that call of Swiss Skydiver winning the Preakness. She is one of those dual qualifiers that you mentioned. She won a win in your in for the Breeders' Cup Distaff and for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and she's cross-entered in both with the pre-entries. Ken McPeak playing things pretty close to the vest right now. He's going to take a look at both races, see where he wants to go. I figured I'd let you break the news right here on the show today and tell everybody where Swiss Skydiver is going.
He is being very cagey, and so are a lot of others. You know, with those 201 horses, that obviously that means a lot of crossovers in between races. You know, people were sort of hedging their bets on who was going to actually come from Europe, and especially in some of those juvenile turf races. They are so, you know, with 24 pre-entries, 23 pre-entries, they really those are very popular, and everybody kind of waits to see where the Europeans might land before they make their final decision. But everybody has to pick a race by next Monday at 10 a.m. That's when entries close. And yeah. People, you know, I want to encourage people. This year is going to be such a virtual experience for our fans, you know, that there are so many really cool things that are going on the website. There'll be individual handheld cameras following around each of the 14 entrants in the race, so people can tune in and just watch the one horse they want to watch. There'll be all kinds of virtual reality and augmented reality. The TVG is doing a fantastic job of covering the morning workouts. All of our horses are now getting their Breeders' Cup workout towels delivered, so you'll start to see them on the track in their purple and uncolored towels. There's a pre-entry key on our BreedersCup.com website that shows you what the horse's name is and what race they're entered in, so people can follow along at home and watch their favorites on the track as they prepare for these races.
Yeah, really cutting-edge stuff, and we'll encourage people to do that, to go to BreedersCup.com to learn more about all the things that they can take advantage of. And you look at what might happen in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is always the race that everything builds toward. Not that the other ones aren't special, because they are, but everybody seems to be locked into that Classic every year. Improbable, Maximum Security, Authentic, pointed there for Bob Baffert. Then you have Tom's D'Etat, you have By My Standards, all of these older horses. And if Swiss Skydiver decides to go to the Classic, she would join Authentic and Tis the Law, and it would be, we'd have all three Triple Crown race winners going in the Classic against the older horses.
Isn't
how cool
that
would that
amazing?
Be?
Yeah. Incredible. We were just, I mean, this field is so strong. It is going to be such a competitive race. We cannot wait. You know, it's funny, even being here in the heart of the Bluegrass and the original home of the Breeders' Cup is Lexington, Kentucky. It's where we're headquartered. You'd think people in Lexington would have a pretty good handle on the Breeders' Cup, but literally, you know, after each event, people ask me, so, you know, who won the race? Because it, in their minds, it's really just the Breeders' Cup Classic. You know, it's got such significance that it's just the overriding. That is the culmination of 2 days of world-class championship racing, and we can't wait until they go to the post.
Dora, appreciate the visit. Appreciate all the help and the support that you've always given to us here on the network. And, again, kudos to you and to the team for making this all come together. I know we still have a few days to go, but things are on track, and I can't wait to see it happen Friday and Saturday. Well done.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for all you do for us promoting year-round. It's important, especially in a year like this, that we get those messages out to all our fans, and you're such a big part of it. We appreciate you.
All right. Enjoy the Breeders' Cup, Dora. I know you will. Dora Delgado, the Senior Vice President of Racing and Nominations here on the program. That interview, as well as Mark Cassie's interview, all of our interviews here on the Equine Forum, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace the race and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Going to get to another break. I'll come back and get you set for a busy second half of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses
by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
HRRN is your exclusive radio home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Tune in Friday, November 6th, beginning at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, and Saturday, November 7th, beginning at noon Eastern, as we bring you live coverage of every race on the Breeders' Cup card. The Breeders' Cup World Championships, only on HRRN. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming live on our website at horseracingradio.net.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Halloween edition of the show. Having a little fun there, my producer Lee Delapina, with some of those cool music beds. Hard to believe. It's Halloween already. Poll question today at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is... Well, we're having some fun with that, too. It's kind of a trick-or-treat type of poll question for you this morning. What is your favorite Halloween candy? Gave you four choices. If you like a different one, feel free to chime in with a comment on the post. Skittles, M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, or candy corn? Which one's your favorite? Skittles, M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, or candy corn? For me, I'm all over the candy corns. Love them. But I'm expecting Reese's Peanut Butter Cups to come out ahead. We'll see. All right, do that right now. Continue to vote. I appreciate everybody who's already taken the time to do that. Ron Moquette's going to kick off the second half of the show shortly. He'll talk about his big horse, Whitmore, making a fourth consecutive appearance in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Yet to win it. He's been knocking on the door. He's been close on a couple of occasions, but he's yet to get there. Maybe the fourth time is a charm for Whitmore. Would be really cool to see. And he's a horse, I told you at the top of the show, that's a horse, whether you like him or not, as a horse that you're going to bet on in the sprint. Where do you think he's going to win or not? Forget about that. Seven-year-old gelding shows up, tries hard every time. You have to cheer for a horse like this. You have to. If you love horses, if you love the game, for love of the game, you got to cheer for Whitmore. So Ron Moquette in just a couple of minutes to talk about a fourth try in the Breeders' Cup Sprint with him. Then you have Dale Romans coming up at 9:20. Dale has saddled a trio of Breeders' Cup winners. He's saddled Tappet's Fly, who won the Juvenile Fillies Turf in 2009, Little Mike, who won the Breeders' Cup Turf in 2012, and Court Vision, the Breeders' Cup Mile in 2011. Still looking to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile for the first time, which when you think about some of the two-year-olds that Dale has brought to that race, it's kind of hard to believe he'd still be looking for a first one. I remember Brody's Cause, who looked like he could be the real deal, and he ran okay. He just wasn't going to beat Nyquist that day. Nyquist, eventual Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner. But Brody's Cause is the sire of Dale's juvenile entrant for this year, Sitting on Go, who is an ultra-talented horse. And he has that great relationship with the Albaughs and that family. Smiley Sabatka, also going to be entered into that race. He has Girl Daddy, who is going in the who won the Pocahontas, who was pointed for the Juvenile Fillies, and then a couple of others, too. So I'm going to get a chance to talk to Dale about his contenders at 9:20. Our Kentucky Bred Spotlight comes up after that. That's our monthly report from the KTA, KTOB. So many great things happening here in the state of Kentucky with the purses, with breeding, with racing, raising horses. I'll tell you more about that later in the show. And a special little piece that my producer and I put together for you, looking at horse names who, well, let's just say they tie into this Halloween edition of the show. So we'll have a little fun with that coming up toward the end of the program. So a lot of things to get to, including those interviews, and I'll do that when I come back. So stay with me. Don't forget our Breeders' Cup coverage kicks off on Tuesday morning with the first of three Breeders' Cup countdown shows, and then you'll hear every single Breeders' Cup race with us right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So make sure you're locked into that all week long. Head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out a complete Breeders' Cup week schedule. All right, coming back with the second half of the program, it's next right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco, to win the Belmont Stakes.
But it's Improbable, who has taken command with an authoritative run from last to first. What a star Improbable has turned into, as he is going to romp in the awesome again.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And Honor AP runs right by Authentic, and Odor at the rail, and Rushy, a 16th to go. Honor AP a length and a half. Authentic, Rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Tom's Detas shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth, but with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's Detas.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of this Halloween edition of the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, edging ever closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships next Friday and Saturday. 6 days, 1 hour, 24 minutes until the Breeders' Cup returns to Keeneland. Should be an awful lot of fun. If you missed any portion of the show, my interview with trainer Mark Cassie or with Dora Delgado from Breeders' Cup, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, another way to listen to this show and all of our shows. By the way, if you missed Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton this past Wednesday night, head over to our website and take a listen to that show. Received a ton of positive feedback on social media. Danny Pish, my special guest, one of those guys that started on the rodeo side of things, segued into training racehorses now, highly respected, Texas native, has been loyal to racing in Texas for a very, very long time, for his entire career. And you can listen to that entire one-hour interview on our website at horseracingradio.net. Well, I told you the second half of the show kicks off with Ron Moquette, who is now with me to talk about Whitmore. And I told you, if you don't like him to win the Breeders' Cup Sprint, who cares? You got to love this horse. For love of the game, you got to love Whitmore. Ronnie, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Man, I love to talk about Whitmore. This horse is so cool, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a great personality, and, you know, he brings it, and he's kind of a workman's horse, and got a lot of people that like him.
I said at the top of the show, well, you just heard me say it there about, you know, you got to like Whitmore just because he's Whitmore, but he's going in his fourth consecutive Breeders' Cup Sprint, which in itself is a colossal major accomplishment.
Yeah, you know, he's a kind of, obviously he's a consistent horse, and he's got some ability and stuff, but the thing that it's about, you talking about this being his fourth Breeders' Cup, is his try is so consistent. I think that's why, you know, he has the following he does, and the most important following, I know the fans love him, and that is huge to me, but it, you know, whenever Hall of Fame horsemen and trainers and, you know, jocks that don't ride him, and they all tell me they root for him. That's because of his consistency and because of what we appreciate in a horse is that constant try.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He first raced in the Breeders' Cup in 2017. He was eighth that year. He came back in 2018, was second, and then third in 2019, and hoping to find the winner's circle coming up here next Saturday. What's different, other than his age, Ronnie, what's different about Whitmore now as opposed to that first Breeders' Cup sprint in 2017?
I think he's a lot more versatile. You know, before he was basically a big one run at the end, and you know, a couple of his races at Oakland, he made a huge middle move, and that seems to be where he doesn't have to be as close to the – or he doesn't have to be as far back off the pace now. And I think that part – I think he was just getting tired of getting beat by horses that weren't as good as him that was with softer fractions. So, you know, whenever you're a closer, you live by the pace or die by the pace, and I'd love to see his versatility get a little bit better.
When he was second in 2018, I know you were thrilled for him, but you were also thinking, man, we that could have been us. We could have won that race. What do you remember about that performance that day?
Well, it was, you know, we were in the one hole, and he was doing his normal stuff. He likes to agitate all starters, and whenever you get ready to load him up, he does his double barrel kick. And so he got in there, and there's a horse right to his outside that kind of moved a little bit. He's not a very quick horse out of the gates generally, but we come out of there in a tangle, and you know, had to make up some significant ground in the first half of the mile just to be in contention. And you know, the work was already done, and we lost to a very nice horse in Roy H, who's obviously a really nice deserving winner, but we sure had to run into some slow fractions, and that kind of didn't help our case at all.
Last year, he was third behind eventual champion Mattoli in another race where he kind of got off a beat slow and came with that big, powerful late run. I know you were proud of him that day too, but do you find yourself thinking, man, just get out of the gate one time and put yourself in position?
Or, you know, that usually you think the Breeders' Cup or a grade one sprint, you think there's going to be plenty of speed early. And, you know, it almost is a benefit to be a little further off. And but we've, you know, I was second in a grade one this year where they went 23-4 for the first quarter. And, you know, if that turns around to be 21-3, like you would think when you put the world's fastest horses together on the first fraction, then it would look awful shiny for us to be sitting back there reserved with a lot of energy. So, you know, I just want honest pace, and then it doesn't matter where he's at. If they go fast early, then we got a shot. And if they get to lope around, there's some nice horses that you give them a 22 and change quarter, they're going to kick on home, and then we're just – that guy is too far out of it.
His campaign this year has been rock solid, as you might expect. Six starts, two wins, two seconds. Comes out of a fourth-place finish in the Grade 2 Phoenix. We'll talk about that race in a minute. But I want to go back to his performance in the Count Fleet Handicap, which was the Grade 3 that he won at Oaklawn on April 18th. You and I talked on this very show before that race, and we talked about the fact that if he could win it, he would be the only horse ever to win the Count Fleet three times. You would join Steve Asmussen and Bill Spahr as the only trainers ever to win the race three times. And it all came together. You had to be just over the moon with that performance that day.
I was. And, you know, you hear this sometimes, but it was about for the horse. And, you know, I was so happy that he is able to be Oakland's all-time winningest stake horse. And that's what that race meant. And it was a very good field. By the way, if that's not a feather in the cap for that just to be a grade three, I don't know who's on the graded committee, but they better look down towards a 501 area code and fix some of that stuff, because those races are tough. And it was as good of an assembly of sprinters as we've seen all year. And yet, you know, we were able to come out on top, and it worked out great. And we were lucky because there was like another horse was closing too. But it was a really fun race, and I was so happy and proud that the horse became the all-time winningest stake horse at Oakland with that race.
Yeah, it's not fair that race is only a grade three, because you look at it, and I know one thing the Great Estates Committee always says they look at is, you know, the historical element of it in the last 5 or 10 runnings. You take a look at the last 10 years, and you see names not only like Whitmore, who won it 3 times, but you see Mitoli, who won it in 2019. You see Justin Phillip in 2013. He was no slouch. Smiling Tiger in 2011, Work All Week. The Subtle Indian in 2016, these are horses that could really get it done, really run. And, yeah, you're right. I think that is a race that needs to be looked at as moving up to a grade two.
And, yeah, and, you know, I'm just looking at what I see, you know, and I can promise you this. I don't know if that's who's in charge of that or whatever, but, you know, Oakland's been the little brother for a while. And I think maybe back in the day, for sure, it was justifiable. But I know now that, what was there, 9 grade one winners come out of A other than allowance there this year? I mean, just, yeah. You can't look at the history, you know, too far back whenever we're leading the league in purses and all that. It's hard to win a race there. And when you run against Speech and you know, Echo Town and all these horses are in A other thans, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to do. And the filly that win the Oaks, I think she was in an allowance race as well. I mean, every time you look up, the allowance races are tough. But the stakes races, these people come in for the money. I don't run in a stakes race that doesn't have Cox or Asmussen or Baffert or Pletcher. And, you know, I don't care if you're running against those kind at Blue Ribbon Downs. You better come ready to run.
Now, there's no doubt about it. Even if you look back further, you go back to 1999, a little horse by the name of Re-Raise won the Count Fleet. And as we know, he was absolutely brilliant. So it's a race that has produced a lot of good horses. Whitmore, the next in line to step up and have his name with a Breeders' Cup plaque and see his name in the winner's circle, see him in the winner's circle coming up next Saturday, visiting with his trainer, Ron Moquette, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, share your thoughts on that grade two Phoenix, where he finished fourth, but it was only beaten 2 3/4 lengths. He'll get a rematch with Diamond Oops and some of those horses that finished in front of him next week. But share your thoughts on that performance.
You know, I was a little disappointed with that. You know, the way that the track was playing the first weekend, it seemed like you had to be on the lead to get anything. And, you know, a horse, a 3-year-old colt from Oklahoma come in and run very well, but he's like 45-1. And he run second, being able to hold on. And I told my partners, if a horse like that can come in and hold on to moderate fractions and get a piece of it, then that's going to put us at a disadvantage coming from where we have to come. You know, it wasn't anybody's fault. The rider did what he could do. The horse was ready to run. It's just sometimes those situations work for us and sometimes they don't. I know he ran well and came back good. And, you know, we're going into this race just salivating at the possibility of getting an honest pace in front of us. So, you know, there's a lot of really, really quick horses early and some 3-year-olds trying older horses. I believe there's actually a filly that's very fast that's looking at running. You know, I mean, this is a good group of horses that ought to produce an honest pace. And if they can win it from being on the front end and go as fast as it's going to take to do it, then they deserve to. But it may set up for a horse like that runs our style to perform very well.
That would be great to see. Whitmore going in the Breeders' Cup Sprint next weekend. He'll be a popular horse. Even if you don't like him to win the race, he'll be a popular horse when he steps into the starting gate for sure, just, as I said, for love of the game. Ronnie, a couple of years ago, I remember getting ready for our Breeders' Cup coverage, and I stopped out to your barn at Keeneland earlier, about a week before, and you took the time to do an interview with me. We talked about the fact that year you were diagnosed with sarcoidosis, and I just want to get an update on your health. How you been feeling, and will you be at the Breeders' Cup this year?
You know, if everything's good, I plan on being there. Right now, I feel great. You know, you can't hurt a cheap horse. And I've been able to do training like normal. And, you know, I got to be careful about being around people. The COVID has just been a little extra spice for me just to pay attention because it is an autoimmune disease. So I don't need to run up there and, you know, share anybody's drink or anything. So, but I feel great and I've got a lot of energy and I feel normal. So as long as I stay this way, I can't see why I wouldn't be there and jumping up and down and having fun.
You know, I was going to ask you just kind of off the beaten path here a little bit, but a couple of weeks ago on my trainer talk show, I visited with a trainer by the name of Sean Davis, who I'm sure you're familiar with. He's a Southwest guy. And he came from the rodeo side of things. He was a three-time world champion saddle bronc rider before he started getting into training horses. But much like yourself, a former boxer, he was a Montana State Golden Gloves boxing champion back in the day and a Montana Athlete of the Year. Have you ever had a chance to talk to him and throw a few jabs at each other?
No, I haven't, but I'm going to try to get along with him. If you could, you know, I tell people it's like there's a difference between you know the guys that ride once a month and the guys that do it for a living. You know, it's just everything's a little bit faster, and so those people that Pete Vestal and all the guys that did it competitively, they deserve a little extra credit, and you don't want to. You know, get an argument with them, just let them win.
Ronnie Moquette here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ronnie, always fun to catch up and glad to hear you're feeling well. And let's go throw the knockout punch with Whitmore next Saturday.
Hey, that sounds great. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. Appreciate you being here. Ron Moquette, that interview, like all of our interviews here on the program, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion by going to embracetherace.com. All right, coming up next is trainer Dale Romans. He'll preview his Breeders' Cup entrance. He pre-entered five. I'll talk to him about those coming up and a special Halloween horse name segment toward the end of the program. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
Wise Dan has called on all his class, and Wise Dan has won it.
Only on HRRN.
Orb, winner of the Kentucky Derby and Florida Derby. His runners have scored on both dirt and turf. His recent stakes success includes Mrs. Orb, winner of the Bay Ridge Stakes at Aqueduct, Pippin Stakes victress Whoa Nelly, and Derlew, a determined runner-up in the Grade 3 La Cunada Stakes at Santa Anita. Classic winner, classic pedigree, Orb, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Churchill Downs hosts their 131st fall meet running through Sunday, November 29th. Highlights include the 146th running of the Grade 1 Clark presented by Norton Healthcare on Black Friday, November 27th, and a second Stars of Tomorrow program on Saturday, November 28th, featuring the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club and Grade 2 Goldenrod. In total, the fall meet showcases 10 stakes races, 8 of those graded, offering purses of nearly $1.8 million. Big money, big fields. October 25th to November 29th at Churchill Downs.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Past the eight pole they come, and it's Tappet's Fly on the outside, down at the rail, Rose Catherine, but it's going to be Tappet's Fly to win it. Here's the wire, Tappet's Fly has won it by a neck, but it is Little Mike Allhart, he's kicking on. Little Mike, point of entry, finishing strongly along the inside, down the centre, St. Nicholas Abbey. Little Mike in front though, and Little Mike in an upset. Little Mike won it. Court Vision's running a huge one, Gio Conti late. It's Golden Cobra in the race of life, Turaloo, Court Vision gonna outrun a Turaloo on the outside. Oh, they hit it together, too close to call. Court Vision, Turaloo, an inch in it.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. Halloween edition of the show. More on that coming up shortly. Dale Roman's going to join me here in just a minute. Those three calls you just heard, his three Breeders' Cup winners, and he's looking to add to that record coming up with five horses that he pre-entered this year. I'll talk to Dale coming up in a few minutes. We are efforting Dale Romans, as they say in the game. I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's go ahead and bring you our Kentucky Bred Spotlight segment, and then hopefully we'll have Dale on the line right after that. But this weekly segment, or monthly segment, brought to you by the KTA KTOB. And when you think about Kentucky, you think about full fields, and you think about world-class horses. It's that simple. You breed them here because over $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006. Think about that. Raise them. Limestone-rich soil, the best practices, and strong support industries make Kentucky the best place to raise horses and race them here because purse money at Kentucky's tracks continues to soar, exceeding $118 million in 2020. And 75% of the Grade 1 races in the U.S. this year have been won by Kentucky breds. We all win. It's that simple. Find your Kentucky bred at the upcoming November breeding stock sales, the Fasig-Tipton sale on Sunday, November 8th, or the Keeneland sale Monday, November 9th through Saturday, November 21st. And that Kentucky bred update brought to you every month by the KTA KTOB. Well, nobody knows more about winning with Kentucky breds than our own Kentucky bred, Dale Romans, who is with me now here on HRRN. Dale, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Breeders' Cup week, my friend. Yeah, exciting time of year. Happy Breeders' Cup week.
Yeah, thank you.
I was talking about this before I did that spot for the KTA KTOB, and I was talking about your record in the Breeders' Cup. We actually heard the stretch calls of all three Breeders' Cup victories that you've had, Tappet's Fly, Little Mike, and Court Vision. Boy, those were some horses that could really motor, couldn't they?
They were good horses, all three of them. And, you know, all three of them are pretty big prices when they won their Breeders' Cup races, which is what you see a lot at Breeders' Cup. When so many good horses come together, it's hard to figure out who's going to get the money.
Yeah, I remember, you know, of course, Little Mike, I was a massive fan, I think probably because of his name. I actually have a Little Mike halter here at my house that my wife bought at a charity auction. And, you know, that race in the Breeders' Cup turf was just, it was just so cool.
It's one of the most exciting races I've been involved with. You know, everybody early on had pigeonholed Mike as a miler. And even kind of laughed about us trying to take him up to the Arlington Million and go a mile and a quarter. And, you know, even after he won it, they said, well, he just went to the front and stole the race. And they kind of overlooked him. But when going out there, going a mile and a half, we really hadn't planned on running. We were going to run in the mile. We had Wise Dan there. We couldn't really figure out a way to beat him. We couldn't. So we decided to go the mile and a half, and then we looked at it. There was a lot of speed in the race, so we decided to try to take him back and see if Ramon could get him to relax behind the two speed balls. And, you know, originally when we entered, we thought we'd go wire to wire and steal the race. So in the paddock, when I told Ramon, it looks like we can't go to the front and win. We could get the lead, but I don't think we could keep going. So just sit third and act like you're on the lead, and if they collapse in front of you, then you just got to carry him home the last part of it. It might be one of the most masterful rides in the history of the game.
I remember you joining us on our Breeders' Cup Countdown show that week before Little Mike won that race, and you basically laid it out just like you just did there, Dale. I mean, you had the game plan in place, and it's not often in this sport that everything goes according to plan.
Yeah, it is rare, but for some reason that became very clear to me how that race was going to unfold and how it had to unfold for us to actually win. You're right. It's not very often you can just look at it on paper and it fall right the way it looks, but it did that day. And, you know, those kinds of things happen at Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I remember I remember that interview very well, and I remember how excited you were to take your shot. And, you know, look, we've also talked about trying to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and every year it seems like you bring a big name to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and that's a race that has just eluded you for whatever reason, but you're back again with another crack at it this year.
Yeah, we've had some minor success with seconds, yeah, thirds, and but we haven't been able to crack the winner's circle in the Juvenile. And, you know, that to me, the Juvenile races on Breeders' Cup are so important because it's pretty much your automatic champion if you win one of them. In your other races, there may be arguments for other horses that either win in other races that day or you're competing against other race horses that are running in other races. But the juveniles is pretty much a championship right there. So, yeah, we haven't had the best of luck in it. Hopefully we'll turn that around. We've got a couple of horses doing great.
Yeah, Sitting on Go is undefeated, a winner of the Grade 3 Iroquois on September 5th at Churchill. And then you have Smiley Sabatka, who comes out of a maiden win at Keeneland on October 4th. So a two-pronged attack to that Breeders' Cup Juvenile this year. Let's start with Sitting on Go. Tell me a little bit more about him.
Well, I mean, he's two for two. And, it, you know, it's funny. We ran him 5/8, I think it was, at Ellis Park first start. And he looked hopelessly beat, turning for home. And just exploded the last part of it, and he ran like a 44 buyer. So everybody kind of overlooked him in the Iroquois. But I told everybody that would listen, so he might run a 44 buyer, but from the eighth ball home, he ran a 90 buyer.
Yeah.
And stretching out to the mile, he blew him away in the Iroquois. And I think two turns would do better. I mean, Friday morning, he worked spectacular. He's done everything we want him to do, and he's ready to roll. And well, Sabatka, I don't know if he'll run Smiley Sabatka. He's a good horse. He's doing very well. It was an impressive win at Keeneland. We put him in there to just make sure the field didn't fall apart. A lot of things could happen to juveniles. And we may not even run him after it had 15 pre-enters.
Yeah, it's going to be a big field. Back to Sitting on Go for a second. He's got the pedigree, too. He's by a horse that you know very well, Brody's Cause, out of a more-than-ready mare. You know, Brody's Cause was third in 2015 behind Nyquist, so he ran a good race. And I think there's some similarities in terms of their running style, too, isn't there?
Yeah, they do. They run a lot alike. They get just a big, big gangly run and cover a lot of ground quickly. You know, his father won the Futurity at Keeneland and the Bluegrass, doing the same running style as he has. And you're right. Brody's Cause, to me, it's the sleeper of all sleepers in the stallion bunch. He only had 50-something foals his first crop, and he's already had a greatest stakes winner. He's had a listed winner. He's got two horses pre-entered for the Breeders' Cup, and he's only standing for $5,000. He could be a really good horse.
Yeah, Smiley Sabatka, also a son of Brody's Cause. So if he did run, you'd have two by the same sire in that race. But as you said, Smiley Sabatka may end up sitting this one out. And that's fine because, you know, one thing that we always talk about with the juvenile is looking ahead to the first Saturday in May and you know, the Kentucky Derby.
You know, he's the right type to get there, I think. I don't think distance will ever be a limitation to him. And he's one race over Churchill now, so we know he likes the racetrack.
Yeah.
That's hard to look past this weekend all the way to next May, but you can't help but do it.
Yeah, you have to. You have to. It, maybe yeah. On the first Friday in May, we see Girl Daddy swing into action over there at Churchill Downs. But first, she's got to handle the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. The Pocahontas winner looked good doing it that day. Tell me about Girl Daddy.
No, she's just pure talent. I mean, she's an expensive yearling. We paid $500,000 for her, but you look at her two races and her explosion and how quick she can turn a foot she has and can gobble horses up. She's extremely. Joe worked her this morning and came back and said, I don't know how good she can be. He said, I mean, this could be a filly they're talking about all next year.
What did you like about her at the sales that led you to pay $500,000?
I want to tell you the truth. I didn't have a whole lot to do with it. I didn't have a lot to do with purchasing of all the all-ball horses. But this one, Dennis All-Ball decided outside of our norm that he wanted to buy a filly. And Barry Berkelheimer and his team had identified this filly earlier in the sale, but didn't know they had a client that could buy her. When Dennis came to sale and decided he wanted a filly, then they took him down and showed her to him. And she was a beautiful filly, and he went in and bought her. And I'm glad he did.
You know, it seems like every year, Dale, we're talking about that relationship that you have with the Albaugh family, and they are really dedicated to supporting you and dedicated to supporting this sport. What makes that relationship work? What makes those guys so special?
Well, we've been together a long time now. I mean, they go all the way back to owning a piece of patio prado. And Jason Lush, that runs the whole stable, is just such a big fan of the game and a student of the game. And he understands everything about it, and and we talk every day, two or three times a day, and it's not always just about individual horses, but about theories and the development of horses and how to acquire horses. And we put a program together early on what we thought would work to try to get a Triple Crown type of horse, and we stick to our program, and it seems to have worked out well.
Talking with trainer Dale Romans here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Five horses pre-entered into the Breeders' Cup this year. You also have Sally's Curlin, who was pre-entered into the Filly and Mare Sprint, and Mr. Freeze going to the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Tell me about those two horses.
Oh, they're both good horses, too. They're pretty much, you can see how good they are. Sally's Curlin's won two nice stakes and became grade one place in her last race. You know, she's always going to be a little bit of a victim of pace. She gets so far back and likes to make that one run, and she's exciting to watch run because she can gobble ground up late. And if they, it looks like there could be a lot of speed in here. If they go out there blazing, they'll know she's in the race come the last eighth of a mile. She'll be rolling. And, you know, she's just extremely talented, smart. She's one of the easiest horses I've ever trained. She just never has a bad day. And Mr. Freeze, he had a great beginning of the year, second to Pegasus and winning the mile race at Gulfstream Park, and kind of tailed off on us and got a little flat late. But we started training really good again this the start of the fall and ran big in the Fayette. And go back and look at the pattern in Gulfstream. He ran the mile eight, ran well, came back in a flat mile and just ran the best race of his life. So we're hoping to have a little bit of the same pattern.
Well, Dale, every week on this show, we recognize one of our guests as the industry star of the week, and the segment presented by Stuart Morris. And so I thought, who better than trainer Dale Romans to recognize as this week's industry star of the week? So congrats on that honor, my friend. You're already winning to kick off Breeders' Cup week.
That's a good, I'm already a winner. Stuart's a good man, so it's a good thing to win. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. Hey, before I let you go, we have a poll question out there on Twitter. What is your favorite Halloween candy? And you got four choices: Skittles, M&M's, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, or candy corn.
Candy corn, how does that even make the top 20? Everybody in the world knows that when you're out trick-or-treating, you want to get a Reese's in your bag.
See, I want candy corn all day long. It's by far my favorite.
I could never stand to eat that. If candy corn was the only thing I had to eat, I'd be as skinny as a rail. I never understood it, and there's only one reason they bring it out, is to torture kids during Halloween. If it was a good candy, they'd be eating it year-round. You ever walk into a 7-Eleven and buy a bag of candy corn?
I have.
You got it. You have. Well, you might be one of the few. But anybody, I tell you, when I trick-or-treated, I wanted all the Reese cups. I'm thinking I even snuck in my brother's bag and stole a few of theirs.
Yeah, I think that's going to end up being a runaway winner. I was never a fan of them.
You could have thrown a little Snicker bar in there, too. That was always good.
Oh, those are tremendous. Yeah, that should. If you could put five choices, Snickers would have made the list, too.
Sure.
Dale, listen, man, I appreciate it.
It's one of my favorite times of year.
Yeah, me too. What's the best costume you've ever worn?
I think when I was 9 years old, I dressed up like a little girl, and everybody thought I was. They didn't think I had a costume on.
It got a little weird when you did the same thing at 49.
Yeah, my mother had the right idea to make me a cross-dresser at the time.
Yeah, it's only weird when you do it at 49, Dale.
Right, yeah. It didn't work out as well last year, but...
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Good luck in the Breeders' Cup.
All right. Thank you. See you over.
Dale Roman's always a lot of fun, and looking forward to seeing his horses strut their stuff next week here at Keeneland. All right. When I come back, we're going to look at some of the horse names historically in our sport that have tied into Halloween. It'll be a lot of fun. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old.
and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home. Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War. Will Take Charge, a final man. Mucho Macho Man. He did it over Will Take Charge.
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop grade one winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred, Mucho Unusual, all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Edina Springs.
And they're off in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Don't miss HRRN's Breeders' Cup Countdown shows. Tuesday through Thursday of Breeders' Cup Week, Bobby Newman and Jude Feld will bring you up-to-the-minute news and analysis every morning leading up to the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Keeneland. The Breeders' Cup Countdown, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern, during Breeders' Cup Week, only on HRRN. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information or to listen live.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But a Halloween edition of the Equine Forum winding down on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna back with you here on HRRN. It's been a fun show. Dale Romans, Ron Moquet, Mark Cassie, Dora Delgado, all part of what has made this program a Breeders' Cup edition, too. Looking ahead to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, I'll remind you one more time that our Breeders' Cup Week coverage kicks off on Tuesday with the first of three Breeders' Cup Countdown morning shows. You can listen 8 to 10 Eastern, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday mornings. All of our regular programming that you hear year-round is also included next week. And then our exclusive radio coverage of every Breeders' Cup race on Friday and Saturday. And it's all right here on HRN. We've been doing that for you since 2007. Every year we have been your home for the Breeders' Cup on radio. Very proud to be able to say that. And it's a wonderful relationship with Breeders' Cup, and look forward to many more years of doing that for you as well. You heard me throw out the poll question at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Everybody, thanks for taking the time to weigh in on that. Your favorite Halloween candy. Dale obviously feels like it's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Next week, not only is it Breeders' Cup week here on HRN, but it will also be WinStar Week here on the network. All week long, we'll be celebrating WinStar Farm and their connections to the Breeders' Cup. We'll talk about their stallions, and the stallion roster, just unbelievable. But they're going to welcome in some new stallions after their racing careers are concluded, and we're going to see them in the Breeders' Cup next week. Global Campaign, pointing for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Improbable, also pointing for the Classic. And Tom's d'Etat, who may be the favorite, or one of the favorites in the Classic, and probably going to be there too. All of those horses will eventually stand at WinStar when their races are concluded. You heard Dale talk about how good he thinks Brody's Cause is going to be. Well, he has another horse that he trained that now stands at WinStar that's going to be really good, and that's Promises Fulfilled, who is ultra fast. But you can go to WinStarFarm.com to see their entire stallion roster and learn more. But next week, we'll celebrate WinStar Week all week long through all of our shows here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and that should be a blast. All right, so over the years, there have been a lot of horses with names that have ties to this particular day, Halloween. And with that, I bring you a fun little segment that we put together to kind of wind down this edition of the Equine Forum.
Let's face it. No matter how old you are, Halloween can be a bit spooky. Seeing your neighbor's house decorated with skeletons, ghosts, witches, and cobwebs, or walking through a haunted house with chainsaw-wielding zombies jumping out at you around every corner, it can be a bit unnerving, even for the most hardened of Halloween fans. And over the years, horse racing has gotten into the bone-chilling act. So I thought it would be fun to see just how many horses I could find to make up the ultimate Halloween Derby. Let's start by putting on a costume, which, by the way, is the name of a chestnut daughter of Twining who won just once in 24 starts back in the mid-90s. She didn't exactly scare the competition. One of the best Halloween traditions can be summed up in just three words.
Trick or treat gets all the candy to start off the pick six, winning by two.
And it always seems at this time of year, like everyone has their favorite trick to play.
Favorite trick responds in an instant. He opens up by 3.5 lengths. Dawson's Legacy, the Canadian second, Souvenir Copy third. Here is an undefeated champion. Favorite trick, and he ran like a champion today, winning by five.
For those not into the trick-or-treat scene, maybe you just want to kick back on the couch with an old episode of a 1960s hit sitcom and remember the great Calumet Farm Hall of Famer, The Witch. But if for some reason you do find yourself visiting a haunted house,
and Nathan Haar keeping Haunted House to task, Haunted House to win her debut, Haunted House scores.
And make sure you watch out for a silver ghost, the Virginia bred who won three races for trainer Joe Canty in 1985. And of course, this guy, who did it a bit better in 1995.
But now Silver Goblin moves out to take the lead.
For some, their worst nightmare would be seeing a ghost.
Shaman Ghost is drifting out a little bit while giving chase. It's Midnight Storm. Shaman Ghost out towards the middle of the track. It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Which is why it's important to always bring your trusty Ghost Zapper along with you.
Ghost Zapper has now shrugged off.
If by now you're still in the mood for more ghoulish fun, consider these names given to horses as you place your bets this Halloween. Casper was as friendly as he could be, but it's hard to say the same for Kruger, Reaper, and Zombie. Then there's the Phantom, Dracula, and Cruella, Ripper, Fester, Scarface, Witch, and Boo. All horse names worthy of being part of the ultimate Halloween Derby. But for me, the horse who I will always think of first on Halloween is the one who tried twice to win the appropriately named Gravesend Handicap. He never did, but he raced 85 times, winning 34, flying through the stretch like a witch on a broom. For the competition, his name would often mean doom.
Spooky Mulder, Call Me Tony in a pitched battle down the stretch here. Spooky Mulder fighting his way to a short lead. Spooky Mulder in front. Call Me Tony fights him hard all the way down to the line. But at the finish, it's going to be Spooky Mulder.
Yeah, a little fun there with some names that tie into this Halloween. And there have been many more. Spooky Mulder's a horse that I really liked. I mean, you talk about a horse that was honest and would show up all the time. Really cool. And then you hear from Ghost Zapper in there and Shaman Ghost and really cool stuff and nicely done by my producer Lee Delapina in putting that piece together. You know, there have been others too. You know, there was a horse named Blair, if you want to look at Blair Witch, Bones, Voodoo, and then there was actually, you heard Trick or Treat in that piece. There was actually a horse named Trick and a horse named Treat. Now, when you go back and look up the race records, many of these horses only had a couple of starts. Some didn't win at all. Some only won one or two races. But it was just kind of cool to go back and spend some time looking up horses that were kind of tied to Halloween. There have been plenty of them over the years. And, you know, one of the cool things that I remember about racing on this particular day is Keeneland. Now, Keeneland's, of course, not running. They're shifted to Churchill Downs this year. But when Keeneland and their fall meet would run on Halloween or right around Halloween, you would always have the headless horseman that would gallop down the stretch, and that was kind of cool to see. Don't know who that headless horseman was. I actually reached out to Kurt Becker. And by the way, Kurt feeling much better. It came out last week that Kurt had tested positive for COVID. Travis Stone filled in the final day of the meet for him calling races. I've been in touch with Kurt pretty much every day, and he is feeling much, much better and recovering nicely at home, and we'll see him back here for the Breeders' Cup and for the November sales. So, you know, get better, Kurt. But I reached out to him to find out exactly who that person is, the Headless Horseman. And he wasn't even sure who the person was, but I thought, man, it'd be cool to have them on this Halloween edition of the show. But that's one of the things I remember about racing on this particular day. Of course, all the trick-or-treating and all of those things, and, you know, pretty cool stuff. There's actually a listing out there I found. I think it was on the paws.net when I Googled evil horse names, and they had like 150 names, you know, Hilda, you know, for example, if you want to go with a witchy type of name, you know, Raven, and names like that that could tie in to, you know, to this particular holiday. How about Doolahan? Should have asked Dale about that. Doolahan, Dullahan, could have used that clip in our little feature piece there. Headless Horseman, Doolahan, trained by Dale Romans. And another horse that I believe ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile for Dale. Phantom. There was a horse named Phantom. Freddy. Go to Freddy Krueger. All right, I'll stop now. All right, anyway, so that was kind of fun. And, again, my thanks to Lee for putting the whole thing together. All right, I'm going to go ahead and get to another commercial break. When I come back, we will talk more Breeders' Cup and get you ready for a very busy week ahead. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Ouija Board was becoming a familiar face in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare turf. Having won the race in 2004, she returned to finish second in the 2005 running and was back for another try in the 2006 edition at Churchill Downs. Sent off as the 6-5 favorite under Frankie Dettori in the 10-horse field, Ouija Board bided her time toward the rear of the field as Longshot's Dancing Edie and My Typhoon dueled on the front end. But as the field arrived at the top of the stretch, Dettori had Ouija Board in high gear.
Ouija Board in full flight for the wire. Filmmaker coming on, gangly Honey Rider. But this is another scintillating effort from the shoe superstar, Ouija Board and Frankie Dettori. They win it by 3.
Ouija Board had become the first horse since De Haas to win Breeders' Cup races in non-consecutive years, and by doing so, provided racing fans with another memorable moment in Breeders' Cup history.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, how could you not love Ouija Board? I love that piece. How spectacular was she? More memories coming up Friday and Saturday at this year's Breeders' Cup World Championships, the 37th Breeders' Cup. I'll let you know that coming up this Wednesday on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, you're going to hear from trainers Chad Brown, Bill Mott, and Steve Asmussen. It's going to be a different type of Trainer Talk. Typically, I'll visit with trainers about their life, their career, how they got started. This past week was a lot of fun with Danny Pish. But next week, we're going to focus on Breeders' Cup runners. And you'll hear those interviews as part of Trainer Talk, 6 to 7 Eastern on Wednesday, all presented by Fasig Tipton. Then you've got the BrisNet.com call-in show this coming Thursday night at 6. And on Friday, a special edition of the Naira Betts Weekend Stakes Preview, an extended 90-minute edition. Usually it's an hour, but because of the way that the Breeders' Cup coverage falls for us on Friday, we're going to have a little extra time at the end. So 5:30. Following our Breeders' Cup Friday coverage, you'll be able to listen to Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman preview all the big races coming up on Saturday. They'll go through every single Breeders' Cup race on Saturday in detail. So make sure you join us all week long for all that Breeders' Cup coverage. Want to remind you, too, that you won't want to miss the October 24th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. Features include quite a coup. Gail Benson's GMB Racing will continue forward after Tom's d'etat, which is lovely news. Kentucky gentleman Alex Campbell Jr. has quietly reshaped Lexington, quietly campaigned Grade 1 winners. You can check that out by Evan Hammonds. And a clean restart. Breeders' Cup joins major tracks in prohibiting Lasix in races for two-year-olds. And then in every way, Breeders' Cup distaff and appreciation by Jay Hovde. Plus, you'll see the Breeders' Cup pre-entry past performances, all part of the Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. Download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play, or go to shop.bloodhorse.com, and don't miss their fall special going on now. 10 weekly issues for only $10. Go to bloodhorse.com/fall20 to take advantage of that special offer. Well, edging ever closer to the Breeders' Cup now, 6 days and 33 minutes. That's all that remains until the Breeders' Cup Friday and Saturday at Keeneland. Should be a lot of fun, and of course you'll hear every race right here with us. So earlier in the program, Mark Cassie was on talking about trying to win a sixth, maybe a seventh, maybe an eighth Breeders' Cup race. He has five already. But he was talking about his contenders, and Got Stormy is one of those horses that you just kind of feel is sitting on a big race. Got Stormy is, you know, pretty much as honest as they come. Shows up, runs a big race all the time. And she's going to be one of the ones that you better keep an eye on. He also has Spanish Love Affair, who maybe I'm partial to in some respects, because I got a chance to go out and sit with her owner, Michael Hernan, when she ran second behind Aunt Pearl at Keeneland a few weeks ago. But as Mark said, this is going to be a very different turf course than it was a few weeks ago. There's no doubt about it. You're going to have horses that, now, let's face it, Aunt Pearl ran a great race, lowered the track record that day by, what, a second and a half? It was a freakish performance, but she went wire to wire on a turf course that was firm, and we saw several horses winning on the front end or just off the pace. So take nothing away from that performance, but what I'm saying is that you're going to, when you're handicapping the races at Keeneland, keep that in mind. The turf course that you're going to see next Friday and Saturday is going to be different than what it was 3-4 weeks ago. We've had some rain here in the Lexington area, a lot of rain yesterday, which will soften it up. Now, the forecast coming up this week is pretty good. It's probably going to be a pretty dry week, so it'll firm it up a little bit, but I think it's going to be slightly different than what we saw a few weeks ago. So for horses like Spanish Love Affair and others that weren't able to make up a lot of ground on some of those front runners, if you like them, you really can't be afraid to take a shot. And you know, Dale Romans, when he joined me a short time ago, pointed out the fact that with Breeders' Cup, all of his winners, his three that he's won with so far, Tappet's Fly, Little Mike, and Court Vision, were all pretty good prices. And that, at its core, is the true beauty of Breeders' Cup. You know, for horse players, you're always looking for value in any race. But Breeders' Cup is loaded with value. And it's loaded, every race is loaded with graded stakes winners, good horses that are going to go off at double-digit odds, just because of the depth and the quality of the fields. And then you throw in the Europeans. You heard Dora Delgado earlier in the show go back and talk about some of the Europeans that came in, at least that were pre-entered and are expected to come, 39 international horses. So you throw in those horses with the top American horses, North American horses, and it offers unbelievable opportunity to find value. So as you're getting ready, and I know many of you are already poring over the pre-entries, but as you're getting ready to bet those races and you start to solidify a game plan, my advice is that if you do like a horse, don't worry about the tote board. There's that adage, the old saying in racing that, you know, says that the horse doesn't know he's 20 to 1. 30 to 1. The horse has no idea. He can't read the tote board. If you like a horse, don't be afraid to throw him in. Don't be afraid to put your money where your mouth is, so to speak. That's the beauty of Breeders' Cup. And we're going to talk about several angles throughout the week. I mentioned the trainer talk show that we'll have for you next Wednesday, but Bobby Newman and Jude Feld are going to visit with so many of the connections surrounding the top horses in the Breeders' Cup and some storylines that maybe you haven't heard of yet. They're going to do that for you coming up beginning on Tuesday morning, and that should be a must-listen for anybody that's getting ready for the Breeders' Cup, to play the Breeders' Cup, because you probably, like Jude used to talk about all the time, as a former trainer, when he does these interviews and he's interviewing another trainer, you listen and kind of read between the lines sometimes. And we have had multiple occasions over the years where we have picked up on information just by the tone of a trainer's voice or an owner's voice or a jockey's voice. You'll hear them talk about multiple horses, and then it's almost as if when you lead them into talking about a certain horse, their voice goes up an octave. And it's subtle sometimes, but if you're listening to the interview, it almost jumps out at you, and you can pick up on it. So keep that in mind as you're getting ready for the Breeders' Cup. Those things are key. We'll find out, too, which race Swiss Skydiver, the Preakness winner, decides to go. You heard me tell Dora. You heard me mention the fact that if she chooses the Classic against the boys, we would have all three winners of the Triple Crown races in the Classic against the older horses. And that's going to be one heck of a horse race. You'd have Swiss Skydiver, the Preakness winner. You would have Authentic, the Derby winner. And the horse that's under the radar now, Tis the Law, maybe the forgotten horse, if you will. You're not hearing a lot about Tis the Law this spring, this summer, going into the Triple Crown races. It was all Tis the Law. Well, he's been away for a little while, training up to the Classic. Don't count him out. He'll square off with Improbable and Maximum Security and Tom's D'Etat and By My Standards. Yeah, what a horse race that's going to be. Again, coverage kicks off Tuesday here on the network. You want to make sure you're locked into us right here on SiriusXM. You're going to want to make sure that you visit our website for all the SiriusXM channel information. Switches around for the morning shows, the Breeders' Cup Countdown shows. And then all of our talk shows and all of our race coverage next weekend. Been a fun show this morning. Mark Cassie, Dora Delgado, Ron Moquette talking about Whitmore, Dale Romans, all part of this program. My thanks to all of them for taking the time to make this show possible this morning. For my producer, Lee Dallapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, really appreciate all their help as well. Go Steelers. Let's go. 7-0.